Have you seen Kebu's Fuzzy Boo Van? It's a giant furry blue Muppet mobile that brings music and joy wherever it's found in Portland and across the region. We're having a contest this summer. If you spot the van, post a picture on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the hashtag Fuzzy Boo, and you'll be entered to win a chance to have Fuzzy Boo at your event, as well as other prizes. Each picture you take is another chance to win. For more info and clues on where to find the van, go to kbu.fm/fuzzyboo.
KBOO.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5:59 and 40 seconds. Coming up next is an encore presentation of Bread and Roses, where we'll be rebroadcasting a discussion that they had in September of 2016 about white supremacy. Yeah, we're a year later and it's still a significant episode. So stay tuned for Bread and Roses.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Welcome to Bread and Roses, Feminist News and Public Affairs. Bread and Roses is a collective of women identified radio activists. We give voice to those working for social justice and equity, globally and locally, and we strive to challenge systems of oppression. All this, and we have fun. By liking our page, you can get updates and see behind-the-scenes photos. We are also on the web at www.kbu.fm/breadandroses. If you are interested in joining the collective, everyone is welcome, no experience necessary. So to host, produce, or engineer with us, contact KBOO's volunteer manager at volunteer@kbu.org. My name is Jordan Michelle, and I will be one of your hosts this evening, along with Dell.
Hello, everyone.
And Pamela.
Hi.
And we will also have Mary as who was also a part of our Bread and Roses collective. Tonight on Bread and Roses, we are going to have a special kitchen table conversation with several of our collective members about working to end white supremacy and racial oppression. If you have been listening throughout the day, KBOO has been broadcasting audios on the topic and has shared different perspectives of the history of white supremacy locally and nationally. We, as a Bread and Roses collective, will also share our thoughts on this topic with open and honest conversation about our history, our personal experiences, the role of feminism in ending racial oppression, and the work we have to ignite in order to see change.
All right. That's an ambitious conversation, Jordan and Pamela, and Mary Pulsway will join us in a minute. And this is a special conversation. It's been a special day at KBOO because we are in our membership drive, and we are calling on you, listener, who spend hours listening to us, who really are devoted to listening to the voices that we bring through the airwaves, to pick up the phone this evening and make your pledge, make your contribution to your community radio station. The number to call is 877-500-5266. You can also go online at kboo.fm and click on the donate button. The Bread and Roses Collective has been around for 30 years, and it's an incredible opportunity. It's been an incredible opportunity for women and women-identified folks to come here and share their voice, their perspective. We are community members. members just like you, which is why Mary created this kitchen table conversation concept, so that you could get to know us more and you could get to know us as individuals, as community members. These are the voices that KBOO brings you. Community radio, we are the community. We make the content, and we now need your support so that we can keep the station going. 83% of everything it takes to run this station comes from you, the listener, which really means that we collectively own this station. We own this project together, and now it's the time for you to join and be in this community with us. Again, 877-500-5266 is the number to call, or kboo.fm.
Alrighty, Dale, thank you. So we want to start off our conversation about just our general experiences dealing with white supremacy, or just your own personal involvement with racism, you know. Did any of you guys want to start off that conversation?
I will let Pamela start.
It's like we have been around each other enough that Dell can read my mind. because I said, looking at this. May I just start to, let's do the appetizer for this. Racism tends to scare people a lot. Yeah. They're not ready to digest that. It's about, okay, well, let's slow it down. Wait. How about we talk about colorblindness? Because something that, just to get right to the point, that I only really more often hear white people say is that they don't see race.
Yeah,
I don't see color.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, it's like,
a great
right.
place to start.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, great, you don't see me. You do not see other people. And if our radio listeners cannot tell immediately, because I am just a disembodied voice. Mm-hmm. I am a woman of color, and I'm Filipino American, and it's just not a privilege that I have to ignore race.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that when I first encountered, so I'm a white woman and I come from Europe, I come from France. And so when I first heard that concept of colorblindness, you know, I was like, okay, that's an interesting concept. Unfortunately, it's a concept that is so damaging. Mm-hmm. Because as you say, Pamela, it just means, instead of acknowledging that people have a color, have a race, and that in this country, that color and that race has had a history of discrimination and segregation and oppression that is really heavy. Mm-hmm. Then instead, you're faced with, I don't see your color. I just see you as a human being, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess that's mm-hmm. the argument here. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm not judging you based on the color of your skin. I'm just judging you who you are as an individual, which I believe is a great thing to do. But at the same time, when you don't acknowledge the race, then unfortunately, there is the whole racism and the whole current situation that's not acknowledged, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, in theory, would love to be able to just be, you know, all frolicking in the field right. and holding hands.
Like a tampon commercial.
Pretty much, you know, and all getting along and, you know, the color of his skin does not matter, but it does matter. Mm-hmm. It does matter. And that's not the only thing that matters in this country, but that's one of the things that really matters the most in how people are treated.
Mm-hmm. I think that there are definitely people say that and mean different things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so one can say, oh, I don't see color because I'm anti-racist and I want all of us to be equal. But then there's other people who say, oh, I don't see color. You should be treated just like I should be. Mm-hmm. And you know, what's the term? You know, when you get into school and affirmative action, there we go. Affirmative action shouldn't exist, you know. Mm-hmm. So things like that. But, you know, for me, being African American, you look at me and you can't avoid not seeing color, you know. you just can't avoid it, and it is a factor to my being. Mm-hmm. And I take offense to that you don't see color, you know, because like what you guys have already mm-hmm. explained, it's very sensitive, and it's no avoiding. You have to acknowledge that and respect that.
So I just need to even ask if you feel like this has happened too, that when someone says that, either in person or most often online, mm-hmm. That's the shutdown button. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like, we don't need to talk about race now.
Yeah. So true.
And then the jump after that is, we don't need to talk about race, and we definitely do not need to talk about that I'm white.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so, because then that's going to be too close to stuff I'm not comfortable with. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then what I feel like is that I'm pushing.
Right.
So I have to kind of insist mm-hmm. that we talk about something, and although an Asian female like me is not necessarily being subjected to the same stereotype mm-hmm. as an angry Black woman, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. myth, you know, the stereotype, I don't think that I don't want to be angry, frankly. Like, right. Whether or not it's a stereotype, I just right. don't want to be angry all the time when I'm just standing at, you know, in line at Trader Joe's. I don't want to do this.
Right. Yeah.
Don't so want to have to, which is, I believe, why the conversation is so important that we are having it today at KBOO, also because our community of Portland is a majority white. And I think that it's mm-hmm. important that people hear that unfortunately, people of color end up having to be the educators of all of us mm-hmm. out there in the world. And it has a really deep impact on you, right? As you say, I feel like I'm angry. Everywhere, always mm-hmm. kind of like, you know, approaching every situation from like, okay, am I being treated this way because, you know, I'm a person of color or not? And that is a state of mind that nobody should be in. And you're right. Mm-hmm. Whenever people say, well, I don't see color, then yeah, it's shutting down your experience. Mm-hmm. It's denying you your experience history, and your history. Yeah. And the fact that that you know for a fact that people see your color mm-hmm. all the time mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and that it has such a heavy impact mm-hmm. on everything around us, from mm-hmm. politics to policies mm-hmm. to relationships to what's in the media and to justice mm-hmm. And incarceration. It really has such an impact on all of it. And yeah, I do believe that that white folks, you know, use this as a cop out, because it is uncomfortable to have to think of the fact that, yeah, affirmative action is actually something that needs to exist mm-hmm. and we need to have reparations of some kind. And yes, we all have to give a little bit, mm-hmm. you know?
Right, right. I don't know if you guys have ever experienced this, but like subconsciously in my mind, I'm always paying attention to certain things. Like when I'm out in public and I am around a large population of white people, and, you know, I've dealt with a lot of racism in my life, so it's kind of unfortunate that I think about this. But, you know, for example, when people were passing out flyers, mm-hmm. you know, just or when you walk into a store, like one time I walked into a grocery store and this man was passing out flyers and was talking about what he was doing. And, you know, someone would just walk by, take a flyer and go about their day. But there was a white woman that walked in front of me. Then there was a younger white man walked behind her. He passed a flyer out to them. And then when I followed, he didn't even acknowledge me. He didn't mm-hmm. give me a flyer. He didn't look at me, anything like that. And I walked by him and just automatically I thought of that, and I paused and I turned around and I waited for the next person to walk by mm-hmm. and he handed them a flyer.
And they were white.
And it's just like, wow, you know, and a lot of white people always think that we pull the race card
yeah.
on purpose just mm-hmm. all the time, you know. Oh, mm-hmm. they shouldn't go that far. It's not that mm-hmm. serious. Da, 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 da. But no, like, you know, I'm in the grocery store getting my groceries like everyone else. How come you didn't offer me the flyer? Mm-hmm. You know, and I could have walked up to him and asked him, but I didn't have to. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I want to make like a ton of jokes. Like, I want to make a ton of jokes. Mm-hmm. Like, No, it was a casting notice for the next season of Portlandia. So no, you're not going to be in it. Really? They're not going to ask you. Come on.
Oh,
no.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious.
I want to. And this just points out that for people of color, we need a release. We need this. I have made a million faces, and it's only like what, 6, 7?
Yes, you have made a million faces.
So many faces. This is why I do radio. Because this face is already unbotoxable. This is not gonna, you know, Nicole Kidman along in any kind of way. It is impossible. There's no way. Because I thought about it, I'm just like, you know what was it? It's just, you know, you don't need a hair salon gift card. Like, what could possibly be the thing that he was like, she don't need that.
Right.
No.
Right. Right.
Yeah, and that feeling of being invisible, because you said not only did he not give you a fire, but there was not even an eye contact or a nod of just, hey, I acknowledge you, and maybe you don't want that flyer, that's why I'm not giving it to you, or something. For me, that is very difficult, and that's one of the things that I have been, you know, trying to support the white people in my life to understand, which is when a person of color tells you, like, I feel that, you know, I was mistreated because of my race, that you should never say, no, you are exaggerating. If you are a white person and a person of color tells you about their experience of racism, validating that is the thing that you should do.
Yep.
And thinking about it later, thinking about it, like, imagine, because for me, I think what is so difficult is, you know, all this time that you spend worrying about it, you could be spending doing something else.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And yet, like, I just don't understand why we haven't cloned you yet, though. Because
it's unethical.
Oh, sheep? We're working on sheep? Never mind. Because, yes, you said earlier about us feeling like we have to educate people. But it's like, if we don't, who's going to do it? You know, like, it's a great thing when here and there some of my friends actually earn their white ally badge, and it's just like, checked it, receipts here, I did it. But when it's on a daily basis, when it's on a, you just look at the in the day, all these different ways that you are not centered, you know, that your voice, your story, your face, even.
And that is, you know, the piece, in my opinion, that white people struggle. I think, like, people who want to be ally believe that, yeah, it's like a badge also that you get one time and that's it. You get it for the rest of your life. But it's not. To be an ally, I mean, it's like a verb, you know, you're like always practicing to be in that place. And actually, I want to say that KBOO is such an amazing place that we actually have a conversation that happened once a month among volunteers, KBOO volunteers that I welcome once a month, and we have a conversation about how to build our ally skills. And that is a group that is very important to me, because I get to also be a role model, right? So I'm not cloning myself, but I'm hoping I'm hoping to support with the education piece. And so this is what we do here at KBOO Community Radio. This is those conversations that we are having tonight on Brennan Roses. It's the kind of conversation that we know you care about, the listener, because we are just people like you that are doing radio, and we have our own opinions and experiences, and they're probably echoing some of the things that you feel.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, and you are tuned into Bread and Roses right now. We're playing an encore presentation from their 2006 show that was a membership special that focused in on white supremacy and how to confront white supremacy in our lives. Right now you're listening to music from artist Dow Strom, who has also been on Bread and Roses. And we'll take a listen while we take a little break from those pitch breaks.
First time I heard it.
We are joined by the amazing Mary Postlewaite on the phone. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. How are you guys?
Good. How are you?
Oh, I'm good.
Wonderful. Well, we wanted to ask you, Mary, if you wanted to go ahead and share some of your experiences with racial oppression. You've mentioned to us just as a collective that your black son, you know, definitely endures a lot, you know, especially with him being half, so half black and white. So do you want to go ahead and share your story?
Sure. I have two sons who are their father is African American, and I am to the eye white. But what most people don't realize is that I'm of mixed blood also. Mm-hmm. However, my youngest son Elijah, I'll give you a for instance. In second grade, he was being transferred into another class, and so I went to go to his class and get his stuff out of his desk, and I found that the teacher had taken his desk and put it in the back of the room where his back was facing the class, and it was behind a partition with empty boxes and stuff, kind of like he was tucked in the corner in the closet, and I was really upset. I couldn't believe that they had segregated my son like that. That just really irritated me. It was really bothersome for me. And, you know, I've had a few incidences where my son has been in trouble for things that kids have done, but he was like the easy way out, supposedly. And, you know, for me, he's a young black man. He gets harassed. You know, he's had people call the police on him for things he didn't do. And I know he didn't do because he either wasn't there or I was there. So, I've experienced that. I've even experienced it with my other son when he was like two. In restaurants where people are like, oh my God, you know, you're a white woman, you have black kids, what? I'm like, well, you know, I don't look at it like that. I look at it as, you know, I have children. I don't look at them really. I teach them because I have to teach my son about being a young black man. I shouldn't have to teach my son about being a young black man only.
Yeah. Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I shouldn't have to warn him about being a young black man and walking up and down the street.
Right.
Like he's different from somebody else. But reality is that I do.
Right.
And they harass me for it, too. You know, to them, well, in my own words, I'm a race traitor.
Yeah.
You know, so I get the harassment, too.
Right.
But we move beyond all that. You know?
Yeah. And what's so sad also is that he cannot really experience life like he would. Also, because if he makes any mistake, potentially it could be fatal.
Absolutely. Not to mention, I mean, even right down to his schooling. You know, here I was just able to enroll my son fully in school. Today is when we got his schedule. I can't figure out why it is that everybody is just so scared or so worried about my son. And for those who don't know, my son is 13 years old and he's 6'1". And so he's a large boy on top of being an African American, you know, so now he's got that element of intimidation. And so people look at him and they're like, you know, you did it or you got to do this or you have to do that. So he's not been able to even go to school.
Right.
And I'm like, really? I mean, if you guys don't want him in the school, then that's what you need to say.
Yeah.
So that I can take further precautions and take this another step further.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah, your situation, we can go into this in a whole nother direction, you know, just because mixed kids are in a place where they're not fully accepted by either group sometimes.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's either you're not fully black or you're not fully white. But
right.
in society,
right.
if you have a teaspoon,
right. oh, yeah.
you are, you know.
For
and
sure.
We get judged all the time. I've seen my son at the ripe age of 13 years old be judged by grown people, by officials, management. I've seen my son get discriminated against a lot. And other people around here, and they don't know their rights,
yeah.
so I fight for them.
Yeah.
So I fight for them.
Yeah, so. Actually, that's what I was going to ask Mary, because, you know, what are some of the things that you tell white people in particular, you know, who you believe are racist or miseducated, whatever you want to say? What are some of the strategies that you use to support people understanding the situation?
You know, for me, it's been a lifelong lesson. And my father had apparently some kind of incident back in his past or whatever, and now he's scorned. So he was against me also when it came to the fact that I had biracial children and they're actually black. They're not, you know, light or whatever. They're black. My boys are black, period. You can't say anything about it that's what they look like. They don't even look like they're white.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a zero tolerance. Zero. Because, and you know, I have a unique ability to be able to look through everybody's eyes in a situation. But when it comes to those eyes, I'm blind.
Yeah.
I can't see through them. I just can't. I don't get it. I have zero tolerance. My children are smart. They're great in their schools. Their community loves them. They're active in the church. They're volunteers. They're community coordinators. They've got friends, family. They're like any other person in the world. Why does it make a difference that my son's skin is darker?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what the white people do to get a tan. They darken their skin. Right? Am I wrong?
No, actually, they
Every
love doing that.
Oh, I need a tan. I'm too pale.
Right.
Well, okay. Yeah. Okay.
No, I think this is really educational for lots of our listeners who may have biracial children as well, who can,
Absolutely.
Who, you know, a lot of black folks, we say, you know, white people will never, ever truly understand what racial oppression feels like, even if they are involved in black communities or any minority community. They won't understand it. No matter how much you educate yourself, you have not been a victim of it personally, you know, but for someone who has children and you know, you are experiencing as a parent, you know, dealing with facilitators at school, coming home and you getting that
right.
call, you know, you see it in a whole nother lens, you know, because it's affecting your kids, which means it's affecting you. So yeah, I'm really happy that we're having this conversation and that listeners who have this personal experience, we understand, and you know, it is important to educate yourself and to educate your child about their history, not to
Absolutely.
Avoid it, you
yeah.
know, because
right.
you are who you
and
are.
That goes for everybody.
Right.
You know, any child.
Mm-hmm.
Our children, they're our future.
Right.
My son and my daughters are our future presidents and doctors and
mm-hmm.
lawyers and people who we're going to depend on when we become older.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't educate them, not make them look at people differently.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Don't look at people because that person is black or because that person is Mexican. Look at people as people.
Mm-hmm.
That's my neighbor and she needs some help right now.
Right.
You know, this is my neighbor over here. They've got four kids, two girls and two boys. You know what I mean? It's
mm-hmm.
not, I don't want to hear, oh, well, they over there got two boys and two girls and two of them are black and two of them are Mexican.
Yeah.
So what?
Right.
I don't care.
They're up to no good. Don't help them. You know, like all
right.
kind of stuff.
Right. I don't want to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to educate the people who are still in that frame of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2015, people. It's not like that anymore. You know, even on resumes, what's your race? Other. There's other or mulatto or mixed or mark more than one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's people are people, and let's stop looking at people as somebody who's black or
right.
somebody who's Mexican. My son is just as productive in society as any white person could be.
Mm-hmm.
I can jump on both sides of the line.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I could be white because I look white. I got blue eyes and fair skin. But if you know me, then you know that I'm not all white.
Mm-hmm.
So you know that I have that lens also.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And when people find that out, I've lost friends over that. Well, they weren't friends to begin with if I lost them, right?
Pamela, do you have a question or reaction for Mary?
I wanted to ask, if you think that there has been any time that you being white and being present has ever protected your kids, like if you being there on the scene or something and being able to say, no, that's my baby.
Right, I understand exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
I'm going to say yes because of this. When people look at me, when they see my son and he's in trouble and then here I come and they see me, for them, it's, okay, she's white, so it's different. They come at me as a different child.
Mm-hmm. That's what I guessed.
For me, but for me, I come at them with nothing about a racial thing until they try to tell me that my son's a young black man. Really? I never knew. You know what I'm saying? I mean, come on now. Yeah, so I come at them with the lens of, you know, just people, what happened, who did what.
Mm-hmm.
You come at me with the lens, oh.
Yeah.
Okay, well, ma'am, your son, you know, he's over here causing problems. He stepped on that spider and threw a piece of paper on the ground.
I mean,
maybe not that small, but yeah, that small.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I think that that's what's so interesting, because we started the conversation around colorblindness, right? So there is both, you know, the need for moving forward and treating people, especially our youth, equally. But yet it's so ingrained in people's mind that we're not there yet. We're not at that place where most people can feel comfortable with that.
And with all of that being said, I also have to say, there's been a times, and I can just about say anybody's life, where they've looked at somebody and made a comment or thought something, and their race came into play in their mind.
Yeah.
And that happens. But that doesn't mean you're a racist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That just means that you're looking at the whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, society today is still trying to oppress those of color.
Yeah.
Native, you know, anything other than white, really, you know, and even some white people, but they're trying to oppress them still in 2015. Really, you guys?
Mm-hmm.
We're dying here. The world is going to hell.
Mm-hmm.
We're having fires and earthquakes and all of that other extracurricular Mother Nature stuff, and you're worried about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you're worried that my son is black?
All right.
Not that he's a teenage boy learning and making mistakes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's bothersome to me.
Yeah.
It's a very heated topic for me.
Oh, no, it really is. And I know, Mary, you're going to have to go very soon.
I am.
Yeah. So I want to thank you so much for taking the time to joining the conversation tonight and for sharing a little bit of your perspective.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Mary Postlewaite, the creator of the Kitchen Table Conversations.
Yeah.
We decided to bring the conversation to you tonight, cable listeners, because all day KBOO has prioritized airtime so we can have this very hard conversation about making this happen in our lifetime, working to end white supremacy and racial oppression. What a huge task. And yet, at the same time, unless we undertake this task, we are never going to be able to get anywhere. And furthermore, it's time to end. It's time to end the pain and the suffering that comes from when I listen to the testimony of Jordan and Pamela and Mary. It's been enough. It's been enough suffering. And it is up to all of us to pick up the work that there is to do. And in the next part of this conversation, we'll talk about some strategies, some of the things that we have to do. In the meantime, please, listener, if you are enjoying the conversation, if you believe it is meaningful that KBOO is devoted a day to this topic, even though the conversation is happening on KBOO all the time.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, and you are tuned into Bread and Roses. We are re-airing a white supremacy special that Bread and Roses played in September of 2016 during their Drive membership special. And so right now you're listening to Ode to Motherland by Dow Strom.
She told him. time I lied.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 6:59. Coming up next is Hard Knock Radio. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Los Van Van Live in concert at the Tao Event Center, Saturday, August 20th in Portland. Los Van Van is a Grammy Award-winning Cuban salsa group that has been a pioneer in Cuban musical fusion for the last 48 years and is one of Cuba's most popular dance bands. Again, that's Grammy Award-winning Los Van Van Live in concert at the Tao Event Center, Saturday, August 20th at 8 p.m. in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. Books and Records! Books and Records! Come on down to KBOO's annual used book and record sale on Saturday, August 19th, noon to 6 p.m. at Cider Riot. There will be fabulous books, DVDs, CDs, and vinyl at ridiculously low prices. It's a fun community event that benefits your favorite community radio station. KBOO! Again, that's KBOO's annual used book and record sale on Saturday, August 19th from noon to 6 at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Cooch Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-503-503.